Hallo ihr Lieben, bevor es mit der Folge losgeht, ganz rasch eine Bitte in eigener Sache. Es ist Award Season, das heißt, es werden fleißig Preise vergeben und wir bei Weltwach, wir sind noch ganz begeistert und beseelt und dankbar, weil wir kürzlich für unsere Reisereportagefolgen, zum Beispiel zu Tansania, Irland und Niedersachsen, auf der ITB 2024 mit dem Columbus Radiopreis in der Kategorie Bester Podcast ausgezeichnet wurden. Und jetzt gibt es schon wieder die nächste Chance, einen Preis einzusammeln und die würden wir natürlich gern nutzen. Aber dazu brauchen wir euch, denn ihr könnt für uns abstimmen und zwar beim Deutschen Podcastpreis in der Kategorie Unterhaltung. Einfach Deutscher Podcastpreis und Unterhaltung googeln und dort für uns abstimmen. Oder auch in unseren Linktree in der Showbeschreibung schauen. Auch dort haben wir den Link für euch hinterlegt. Das geht innerhalb weniger Sekunden und wir wüssten eure Stimme wirklich sehr zu schätzen. Ganz lieben Dank und los geht's mit der Folge.
The wild strips the kind of fluff of life away and people connect as a human to human rather than kind of title to title or job to job. It demands respect and it rewards quiet determination. I'd never have reached the top of any mountain just on my own. I'm not talented enough. I'm not strong enough. I think the magic of mountains is a reminder of our fragility and a reminder of that together we're stronger.
Grenzgänger und leidenschaftliche Weltenwanderer nehmen uns mit auf ihre Streifzüge und bieten Einblicke in ferne Orte und faszinierende Kulturen. Mit offenen Augen ins Abenteuer. Das ist der Weltwach-Podcast mit Erik Lorenz.
Hallo ihr Lieben. Manchmal ist man ja ein bisschen enttäuscht, wenn man ein Idol trifft, weil die Wirklichkeit dann am Ende doch nicht mit den Erwartungen mithalten kann. Umso erfreuter war ich, schon im Vorgespräch mit dem Gast dieser Folge festzustellen, dass er genauso offen, neugierig, zugänglich ist, wie er in seinen TV-Shows wirkt.
But nice to be with you. Where are you in the world?
I'm in Los Angeles right now, where I live. But probably my accent nice. Gives me away, so I am originally from Germany. But I've been here for 2 years now in the US together with my husband. That's where you hear me from.
Nice. Good for you. Is it not too early in the morning?
No. You even moved it back 1 hour, so now it's really perfect.
Okay, perfect.
Ja, und so begann Bear, bevor wir das Interview offiziell gestartet hatten, erstmal mich auszufragen.
Tell me about yourself. What are you into, Eric?
Und weiter auszufragen.
I love it. Good for you. Where were you brought up?
Und immer wieder auch zu loben und zu ermutigen.
Amazing. Good for you. Yeah.
Wenn ihr euch jetzt fragt, Bear Grylls, wer war das noch gleich? Er ist eines der weltweit bekanntesten Gesichter, ich glaube, das darf man wirklich sagen, des Survival- und Outdoor-Abenteuers. Und er hat mehr Abenteuer-TV-Shows für globale Sender moderiert und produziert als irgendwer sonst auf der Welt. Und er ist der Gast in der Weltwach-Historie, um den ich mich am allerlängsten und intensivsten bemüht habe, um ihn zu uns in die Show zu bekommen. Aber bevor ich euch mehr über ihn erzähle, erstmal eine kleine Geschichte. Vor ein paar Wochen habe ich mich mit einem meiner besten Freunde, Simon, das ist der Ehemann von Sanna Lindström, die war auch schon bei uns zu Gast, ich habe mich mit ihm über unsere gemeinsame Studienzeit unterhalten. Wir waren zusammen in den Niederlanden, wir waren in Hongkong für ein halbes Jahr, wir haben auch den Master zusammen in Großbritannien gemacht. Und wir waren uns einig, wenn wir an Letzteres denken, also an die Zeit an der Plymouth University, dann denken wir in allererster Linie an zahllose endlose Abende in unserer WG, die wir mit Bear Grylls' Show Man vs. Wild verbracht haben. Zu Deutsch heißt die Sendung Ausgesetzt in der Wildnis. Wirklich Stunde für Stunde, Abend für Abend, Woche für Woche. Wir haben die insgesamt 7 Staffeln dieser Sendung rauf und runter geschaut. Und das war für uns damals einfach die perfekte Kopfflucht ins Abenteuer und das ideale Gegengewicht zum Büffeln tagsüber. Wir liebten es, Bär zuzuschauen, wie er mit bloßen Händen einen Wels aus den von Alligatoren verseuchten Sümpfen von Alabama zog, wie er in Alaska eine 30 Meter tiefe Schlucht auf einem Baumstamm überquerte, der dann plötzlich unter ihm zerbrach, wie er im Dschungel von Borneo von einer Grubenotter gebissen wurde vor laufender Kamera, wie er von einer Schneelawine verschüttet wurde und sich dann daraus befreite, wie er sich aus einem bei mir kommt gerade die Erinnerung alle hoch, wie er sich aus einem verrotteten Robbenkadaver einen improvisierten Neoprenanzug gebastelt hat. Ich weiß nicht mehr, wo das stattgefunden hat, die Szene. War auf jeden Fall großartig. Ja, und wie er natürlich Rattenhirn und Ziegenhoden vertilgt hat und in der Wüste zum Überleben, klar, völlig klar, anders geht's ja nicht, wie er dort seinen eigenen Urin getrunken hat, den er zuvor stundenlang in der Haut einer Klapperschlange, die er zu diesem Zweck erlegt hat, aufbewahrt. Und der sich, also der Urin, der sich in dieser Haut der Klapperschlange natürlich mittlerweile auch mit Blut und Schlangeninnereien vermischt hatte. Ah, sweet memories. Naja, also ich war ja selbst schon immer gern draußen unterwegs. Ich liebte schon immer Camping und Wandern und kleine Abenteuer. Aber Bear Grylls war definitiv einer meiner frühen Outdoor-Helden. Das hat sich auch nicht geändert, als es irgendwann ein paar Pseudoskandale gab. Er würde insgeheim während der Dreharbeiten gelegentlich heimlich im Hotel übernachten, statt draußen in der Wildnis zu schlafen. Und er sei bei manchen gewagten Unternehmungen in Wirklichkeit gesichert gewesen. Um Gottes Willen. Ich meine, gut, das ist jetzt alles auch schon ewig her, interessiert auch, glaube ich, keinen Menschen mehr. Aber ich war damals immer der Meinung, dass Leute, die sich darüber aufgeregt haben, damals den Punkt verfehlt haben. War es wirklich notwendig und wünschenswert, dass er sich in den dutzenden Folgen tatsächlich jedes Mal in Lebensgefahr begab? Mal abgesehen davon, dass er ja wirklich etliche Male im Krankenhaus gelandet ist. Für mich ging es jedenfalls nie darum, dass er wirklich gerade so davonkommt, sondern es ging darum, dass er uns mit seiner schuljunghaften, positiven Energie gezeigt hat, wie viel Spaß und Inspiration es stiften kann, wenn wir uns der Wildnis aussetzen. Ja, und nebenbei hat er dann halt auch noch ein paar coole Survival-Tricks gezeigt. So habe ich das jedenfalls immer gesehen. Zum Beispiel auch, da kommt mir schon wieder eine andere Erinnerung, wie man in einer Notsituation in der Wüste die Flüssigkeit aus Elefantenkot pressen kann, um sie dann zu trinken. Weil klar, verdursten möchte man ja nun auch nicht, ne? Wir haben uns jedenfalls anstecken lassen von Bears Begeisterung. Und für mich gilt das nicht nur für die Englandzeit, sondern auch weit darüber hinaus. Bear hat zum Beispiel zwei andere enge Freunde aus dem Studium, Basti und Falk, und mich dazu angestiftet, selbst in die Wildnis aufbrechen zu wollen. Mit dem Ergebnis, dass wir irgendwann beschlossen haben, uns für mehrere Wochen fernab jeglicher Zivilisation durch den schwedischen Sarek-Nationalpark zu schlagen. All das soll sagen, Bear Grylls hat damals meine Leidenschaft fürs Draußensein, für die Auseinandersetzung mit der Natur, wie kaum ein anderer Einfluss geprägt. Für ihn prägend, also für Bear, und damit komme ich jetzt auch mal auf ihn zu sprechen und weniger auf mich, für ihn prägend waren zum einen sein Vater, der hat ihm zum Beispiel das Segeln und das Klettern beigebracht, als er noch ganz jung war, und die raue Natur Großbritanniens, in der er aufgewachsen ist. Als junger Erwachsener verbrachte er dann 3 Jahre als Elitesoldat bei den britischen Special Forces, als Teil des SAS-Regiments, das steht für Special Air Services, also wie gesagt, das ist eine Spezialeinheit der British Army. Hier hat er dann noch viele jener Survival-Fähigkeiten perfektioniert, die er später im Fernsehen demonstriert hat. Seine Militärkarriere nahm dann allerdings ein jähes Ende, als er nämlich mit seiner Einheit einen Fallschirmsprung in Sambia durchführte und sein Fallschirm sich nicht richtig öffnete. Und ja, er abstürzte. Er brach sich bei dem Aufprall den Rücken und zwar gleich dreifach. Und die Ärzte haben ihm gesagt, dass er womöglich nie wieder laufen können würde. Während der monatelange Reha hat er sich dann aber an einen Kindheitstraum erinnert, den er träumte, seit er ein altes Bild vom Mount Everest gesehen hatte, als er noch ganz klein war. Und dieses Bild muss ihn wahnsinnig beeindruckt haben und es hatte den Wunsch in ihm geweckt, dass er eines Tages auf diesem Gipfel stehen wollte. Das hatte er über viele Jahre vergessen, dieses Ziel. Und jetzt mittlerweile war das natürlich eigentlich ausgeschlossen, klar. Allerdings nur eigentlich, denn nach rund einem Jahr schmerzhafter, langwieriger Reha und insgesamt nur 18 Monate nach seinem Unfall erreichte Bear mit nur 23 Jahren als einer der jüngsten Bergsteiger überhaupt den Gipfel des Mount Everest. Und zwar zu einer Zeit, als die Infrastruktur dort oben noch nicht so ausgeprägt war wie heute und durchschnittlich jeder 6. Aufstiegsversuch tödlich endete. Auch während Bear am Berg war, kamen 4 andere Bergsteiger ums Leben. Später überquerte er dann den Atlantik auf einem Aufblasboot, er unternahm eine Expedition in die Antarktis, er stellte den Rekord auf für die höchste Dinnerparty der Welt. Das fand in 7600 Metern Höhe statt, mit Tisch und Stühlen festgebunden unter einem Heißluftballon. Und er saß dann da auf diesem Stuhl festgebunden in Anzug und Sauerstoffmaske. Und er hat auch noch den Rekord aufgestellt für den höchsten Gleitschirmflug der Welt, und zwar in der Nähe des Mount Everest. Er ist dabei 8 6.900 Meter hoch geflogen. Er flog also höher, als der Everest-Gipfel ragt und konnte quasi auf ihn hinabblicken. Und das ist ihm gelungen, weil er für diesen Gleitschirmflug einen Spezialpropeller am Rücken hatte mit so großen Rotoren und so viel Power, dass der ihn überhaupt trotz dieser dünnen Höhenluft dort oben in diese Höhe bringen konnte. Das alles, um nur mal ein paar Beispiele zu nennen dessen, was er gemacht hat jenseits seiner TV-Karriere. Ja, und dann wurde er irgendwann engagiert für besagte Serie Man vs. Wild, für die er bis 2011 in 7 Staffeln und über 70 Folgen die Natur in allen erdenklichen Ecken der Welt bezwang. Darum ging es ja, ne? Der Mann gegen die Wildnis. Und die Show wurde international ausgestrahlt über viele Jahre hinweg und ist mit mehr als 1,2 Milliarden Menschen in 180 Ländern eine der meistgeschauten TV-Sendungen der Welt. Nach Man vs. Wild ging es dann aber für ihn erst richtig los. Er machte etliche Abenteuershows für britische, amerikanische und chinesische TV-Sender, wie zum Beispiel für National Geographic, Discovery Channel, Amazon Prime und Netflix. Außerdem baut er Bear Grylls Abenteuer-Outdoor-Themenparks in Großbritannien und China. Er hat eigene Bekleidungskollektionen, Messer, Uhren, was weiß ich. Ihm gehört mit Be Military Fit das größte Outdoor-Fitness-Unternehmen Europas. Er veranstaltet mit seinem Team eigene Abenteuerfestivals und Parkourrennen und so weiter und so fort. Und seine aktuell größte Show ist Running Wild. Die deutsche Ausgabe läuft unter dem Titel Stars am Limit. Und die läuft mittlerweile auch schon wieder seit 7 Staffeln. In dieser Show nimmt er pro Episode jeweils einen berühmten Menschen, also Sportler, Schauspieler, Sänger und andere Prominente, für einige Tage mit in die Wildnis und er stellt sie dort vor Herausforderungen. Er war zum Beispiel mit Julia Roberts in Kenia, mit Ben Stiller in Schottland, mit Roger Federer in den Schweizer Bergen, mit Kate Winslet in North Wales und, das ist natürlich ein ganz besonderes Highlight, mit Barack Obama in Alaska, und zwar während dieser noch amtierender Präsident war. Zudem, und jetzt geht's auch wirklich gleich los mit dem Gespräch, versprochen, zudem hat er mittlerweile Dutzende Bücher geschrieben, die sich insgesamt über 20 Millionen Mal verkauft haben, darunter 2011 seine Autobiografie Mud, Sweat and Tears. Die deutsche Ausgabe heißt Schlamm, Schweiß und Tränen und ist beim Plassen Verlag erschienen. Das Buch war in Großbritannien wochenlang Nummer 1 Bestseller und wurde in China zum einflussreichsten Buch des Jahres gewählt. Ja, und kürzlich ist nun die Fortsetzung dieses Bestsellers erschienen. Sie trägt den Titel Never Give Up, My Life in the Wild. Und die deutsche Ausgabe hat wiederum der Plassen Verlag herausgegeben. Sie heißt Never Give Up, ein Leben für das Abenteuer. So, sorry, das war eine ziemlich lange Einführung, vielleicht sogar rekordverdächtig, ich weiß. Aber ich wollte euch einfach wissen lassen, wer wer ist, falls ihr das nicht ohnehin schon wusstet und warum mir diese Folge persönlich ganz besonders viel bedeutet. Und ich hoffe natürlich, dass sie auch euch gefällt. Los geht's. Yeah, let's get started if you are fine with that.
Yeah, all ready, all yours.
Okay. Hi Bear, good to talk to you. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Eric.
I'd like to kick off our conversation with a short quote from your current book, Never Give Up. And it goes as follows. If you ask our team the one thing that is like kryptonite for me, they will all say it is doing interviews and long press days. Yeah, and with that, welcome to this interview. I hope I don't have to have too much of a bad conscience.
No, hey, listen, it's a pleasure to be with you for sure. I think I do stand by that quote in the sense that it's probably my least favorite part of my work, but I've kind of learned over the years it is also part of my work. And, you know, we don't do a lot of press. We really don't. We've figured out loads of clever little ways of wording contracts and all of this. And we actually do very little. I don't do a lot of these podcasts either. So, but when we do them with great people. Aww. And we do the shows that, you know, we kind of, you know, really, really believe in us. So well done, you know, and pleasure to be with you. And you're definitely not kryptonite. It's a,
I really appreciate it.
We'll have fun. It's all good.
It's interesting to me that you don't like this stuff that much. I think many people would be surprised by that. Like, oh, well, he's famous. He must love attention. But actually not quite as much.
No, I struggle with it. It's a one part of my work that I really genuinely do struggle with. And I have an older sister. She's 8 years older, much more extrovert than me. You know, I was always kind of the shy one. And she often says to me to this day that she would be much better at being well known than I am. And she goes, why do you always hide away with everything? But I don't know. For me, I never got into this line of work to be well known. That was became a byproduct of doing something that I really loved. You know, adventure has been in a huge part of my life since I was a kid. And the first time I was asked to do TV, I said no three times to the producer. You know, I didn't know about TV. I didn't want to do TV. It was confidence, really. I think I just didn't know what it was about, so I kept saying no. And it was eventually my wife, who's Shara, who's smart, and we just got married and we didn't have very much. And she goes, well, why don't you try it? This guy's persistent. You always say never give up. Why don't you just go and try it? And she was smart, really, you know. And we went and shot the first ever pilot of Man vs. Wild all those years ago. Yeah. And it never felt like TV, you know. We're jumping off things and shooting down the rapids and climbing up cliffs, and they just filmed it and just kept saying, what are you doing? And tell me about this. And it was full of mistakes, and it was full of ums and ahs and trips and falls. And they go, that's what we want. This is great. Let's do it. Keep doing it. And they, you know, put it out late at night one night in America, and it was just good fortune, really. The timing was right, and it flew. And, you know, now further down the line, I have an awareness of how fortunate I've been in so many things, and I was an idiot to say no. And there's been so many, you know, great parts of having this job, but the attention was not one of them. You know, the friendships and the adventure has always been the big motivations for me, and the rest of it, I kind of, like I say, I struggle with a little bit, but I do it when I have to.
Sure. And you mentioned just in passing right now that, of course, for you, adventure started already kind of when you were a child. It was always part of your life. After all these years with nature, in nature, do you still remember the very first time you felt really tested and maybe even scared by an adventure?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it didn't even have a name like adventure.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I didn't really, for me, it was just I wanted to hang out with my dad, who'd been a Royal Marine and a climber and loved that sort of stuff. And we used to go off and do these things as a kid. And I remember always, I was brought up on this island off the south coast of the UK called the Isle of Wight, and it had these great little chalk white sea cliffs. And it was, you know, I look at it now, it's terrible for climbing. It's all crumbling and it's, you know. But as a kid, it felt like the highest mountain in the world. And we'd go and we'd climb up these things. And, you know, it wasn't that I actually necessarily liked the climbing. I just loved being close to him. And it was the stuff we'd do together, you know. And we'd climb over the top and there'd be Granny and a couple of people sat on the benches looking at the sea. And they would go, what are you doing? That's so irresponsible to take your son, your kid up this. But I loved it. For me, it felt amazing. You know, I liked that connection and doing something that just felt difficult and scary at times. But I always kind of trusted him. And you know, that dynamic is still what I love. You know, the bonds with good people.
I think you also had a little bit of a scary experience together once in Cyprus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, forget about that. We went, my uncle was in the army out there, and we went to see him, and they had like some, you know, any place that the army skis is never like a ski resort. It's always like, you know, backcountry, and, you know, there was an old tractor that pulled people up the hill, and it was like one little run. And I was young. I was probably, I don't know, maybe I was 9 or something. But we basically got bored on this one run, my dad and me, and then we end up going exploring the backcountry of it, and we got really badly lost, and the weather came in and it was like a whiteout, and we were just heading down, thought just we'll keep heading down, we'll hit something. And then it was dark and I was getting tired and he was getting tired and the weather was getting worse, and eventually we hit the tree line and we found this track in the woods, and it was like we arrived on it. It's like, do we go left or do we go right? And he said, I reckon we should go right. And I said, I think we should go left. And I never forget, he goes, if you think left, we're going left. And we went left, and literally a few hundred meters around the corner, we hit a road, hitchhiked, eventually got back at like the small hours of the morning. And my uncle, the soldier at the time, he'd had the army search and rescue crews out, and it was like he was going crazy, you know. Sure. And we were just like fired up and excited that we'd made it out. I remember he said to me, he goes, Bear, I wouldn't smile if I was you. And I've always remembered that line, but I couldn't stop smiling. It's like we'd made it, you know?
I just wanted to ask you, because it's funny that your takeaway
actually,
from this...
Actually, I've never told that story before.
Sorry?
Oh, no, it's funny. I'm just... I've never told that story before. It's nice to... I wrote it in the book, but I've never kind of spoken about it.
Yeah.
You know, he's an old guy now, my uncle, but he still remembers it. It's funny.
I think it's a great story because on the one hand, it shows how your dad treated you even in this really nasty snowstorm and really dangerous and scary situation. And on the other hand, it kind of shows that, I mean, I would say other people in the situation would come out of it and probably say, I never want to be in a situation like this again, kind of like your uncle. But somehow you seem to have gotten a boost out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of liked it. And I remember not long after that, back home in the Isle of Wight, we had this harbour, yes. You know, and at low tide, it would be like all sinking mud. And everyone said, never go near the mud, you know, you'll die.
No.
You'll sink in it. And I remember my buddy and me going, I reckon we could cross the harbour at low tide. And we set out and we got about like 100 metres out and it was okay. And then 200 metres, and then it started getting really like gloopy and terrible. And then we started to sink. And then we very quickly found ourselves in a lot of trouble and somebody spotted us on the shore. And then I could see like they were launching the Coast Guard guys. And I was thinking, oh no, I'm going to be dead. And then I thought, I've got to figure out a way out of this. And I remember getting my leg, just literally pulling it out of the sinking mud, and then the other leg one at a time, and not panicking, you know, because whenever I was like panicking, I was getting more in the stuff. But when I was calm and I pulled a leg and an arm out and could lie on the top of it,
yeah.
Then I could like move, and I was like wriggling like a seal, and eventually made it out and, you know, got out in one piece. But we got caught, and then my mum went crazy, and she made me mow the lawn for the head of the lifeboat for the rest of the summer. But, you know, I always look back to that and I think I kind of figured out a lot of this survival stuff like this all through my life by having to figure it out. You know, it's like necessity is the mother of all invention. You know, I like that part of survival. And certainly for me, when we started the TV shows, I didn't want to do just a boring survival show of like making a spoon out of a bit of stick. You know, it's like I wanted to do it like worst case scenario. You know, you're on your own, you're in the middle of nowhere, no one's coming to look for you, you've got a self-rescue, you've got one boot, mm-hmm. You've got 10 feet of rope, you've got a broken knife, what are you going to do? That for me kind of fired me up, and that's when it became fun. It was like, okay, here we go, let's do this. And nothing really has changed over the years. The shows are still like that, you know, and I love
think
it.
It's a part of their secret to success. It's really about excitement and positive energy. It's not so much about exactly how to carve a spoon or anything like that, which are also important survival skills maybe, but it really, I think for many people watching it, unleashed a positive passion for nature. That was one of its strengths. For those of us who haven't seen the show Man vs. Wild, just maybe a very brief overview. What would you say were some of the toughest survival situations that you put yourself into for that show?
Well, you know, we did a lot of them. You know, that first show was 7 seasons, took us all over the world, small team, still best buddies to this day. You know, I'm very proud of the fact that that crew we started with, that film crew, the same crew that are with me on Running Wild and all these other shows to this day. We've all kind of grown up together, had families together, and I'm very proud of that. But yeah, the show was a privilege. You know, we'd get dropped into a whole bunch of the toughest deserts, jungles, mountains, you know, from Siberia in wintertime at minus 50 to the northern territories of Australia in the heat of the summer, the Sahara Desert to the desert islands, to the swamps, to the Belize and jungles, you name it. I mean, it's probably 50 different countries we ended up for that one. But a lot of, like you say, a lot of narrow escapes. I'm not particularly proud of the narrow escapes. I think hopefully over the years I've got smarter and, you know, learned to listen to that inner voice more. And you only get it wrong in the wild once. You got to kind of leave your ego at home when it comes to that sort of stuff and get these things right. But I think in the early days it was like we went in 1,000,000 miles an hour, you know. It was like, come on. And the crew were always saying, Bear, this is like, it's TV, it's not worth dying for, come on, you know, you can find another way down it. But I kind of like that energy. And you know, I think there were a lot of close calls with bitten by snakes and caught in rapids and avalanches and parachute failures and you name it. But the crew say to me, they said, in those days, Bear, you're 120% reckless. and now you're about 70%. So we're going in the right direction.
Yeah.
But I still try and approach it with that kind of like, I'm all in, you know, I'm all in. And I think there's a power to that as well. At the same time, you've obviously got to be smart, and especially with Running Wild, where we're taking so many amazing icons on journeys.
Yes.
These guys are rookies, and you got to kind of moderate the ambitions accordingly.
You have responsibility now.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, Man vs. Wild, Running Wild, all these other shows means that we have now for many years seen you figuring out difficult situations, mastering challenges, always with this positive excitement and a smile on your face. And of course, that also led to the perception of people that you are someone who could basically do and achieve anything, like a real life hero, kind of a global brand for resilience, which I know is big words. But is this kind of perception and expectation, is it sometimes unnerving for you, exhausting to be seen like that?
Yeah, first of all, I'm none of those things. I'm really not. And as I get older, I realize my fallibilities and my frailties and vulnerabilities more and more, you know. The TV shows always make it look amazing. The music's thumping, you know, I'm jumping off stuff and it's all kind of great. But at the end of the day, I'm a regular guy. I do this job because it was about the only thing I was ever any good at growing up. I was never the cleverest or the sportiest or the strongest, you know. I just had that smile and I knew the outdoors lit me up, and I tried to kind of keep doing things that pushed me and kept adventure at the center of what I did. And that was my job in the, you know, in the British Special Forces. It was my job through a lot of the expedition world that was my only world for, you know, many years. And then it's been my kind of focus all through the TV side of stuff. But I do take a lot of it with a pinch of salt. I mean, not just a pinch of salt, a bucket of salt, you know. And I'm much more normal and I get many things wrong, and I've, you know, they always cut it out when I fall over, you know, or when I trip over like a tree root. And, you know, they're very nice and they cut it out. But I'm no different to you or me. And I think this thing of resilience is, I think if I could stand for anything, I feel proud of the words you say about being somebody who stands for resilience, because I think we all need resilience. You know, I need it myself. We all need it around the world. And I think the great thing about resilience, and resilience is just a smart word for what I've called this book, you know, which is Never Give Up. But the great thing about Never Give Up spirit is that it's not a God-given talent. It's something you build. It's a muscle inside. And how do we train our resilience? We go for big things and we fail and we fall down and we get back up and we keep the smile on our face and we put our head down when it's raining and we keep moving and we hold the hands of those around us and we, you know, that's mm-hmm. how you kind of do it. And that comes with just training, you know. You train resilience by failing. And I understood that as a young boy. I kind of like, okay, so I've just got to go for big things and mess it up and then get back on my feet. It's like, yeah, my dad was always saying, yeah, that's it, you know, don't worry so much about the grades or where you've come in the school report. You know, are you giving your best? Are you being kind? And are you never giving up? You know, those were the currencies that were important for him. And, you know, he's no longer alive now, but I look back and I'm so grateful for that, those values, because they're everything in life.
And these values are some of what you are also continuously talking about in your shows. It's not only about survival situations and how to light a fire. You continuously talk about never giving up, about the values of courage and kindness and all of that. And of course, yes, you went for the big objectives, for the tough tasks. For example, trying after initial hesitancy to build a TV career for yourself. But that also means what I already hinted at with my previous question, and you write about it very honestly and touchingly in your book, Never Give Up, and that to this day you sometimes do feel kind of caught between the TV hero and the reality of your skills and your many fears behind the scenes, and that this truth has throughout the years turned you actually more introvert while you were getting more famous. For example, you also write that in the beginning of your career, you thought yourself of a survival expert, and now you feel much more comfortable with the word or description, survival enthusiast.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
To me, that sounds honestly a little bit difficult to be globally known for something that is a very positive force for people, but that you yourself also feel is not completely justified.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that's how life is sometimes, isn't it? You know, I never wanted, like I said, the TV wasn't the, it's still to this day, it's the side I struggle with most. It's why our crew say to us, you know, that's why they go bare. That's why you film at a million miles an hour, because you want it to end. Mm. You know, I love the adventure and I love the journeys with them. But if we could do it without the TV cameras, it would be a dream. But, you know, that's what pays the bills. And that's the kind of, you know, that's the tension as well. And you know, I often have this conversation with the crew and they know that, you know, that tension isn't all bad. You know, that tension is actually what creates a lot of the energy. And I think we've just learned over the years, you know, to work with a team that aren't going to say, oh, let's do that again. Let's do another take of this. Mm. You know, they're just going to film it and let me go. And I think that's been the key to why it's worked in some ways, is that they've just filmed the journey. And we never do a second take or something, not because it works, but just because, like, just film, get what you can. It's fine. And it always figures itself out and gets ever easier now because we can all carry cameras and GoPros. So it's like, it all works. It's fine. Just keep going. You know, we'll get, you miss the river. Don't worry. We'll get the next. Just keep going. And I like that.
Yeah.
But I think as to the point of, do I become more introverted as that gulf between the kind of TV person? I think that does get bigger, and I do struggle with that a little bit. And I think at heart it's it because I know I'm probably not going to be. If I meet people, lots of, and listen, I spend a lot of time with lots of people. I meet people all day, but I always, there's a little part of me that feels I'm not going to be as strong or great as they might expect, you know, and I suppose feel a little bit of a disappointment maybe to them. But that's okay, isn't it? You know, I think you just got to keep the main thing. Keep doing what you do and keep your friends close. I love the adventure. It's been a huge privilege. It keeps going. You know, I never take it for granted. Super grateful every day.
Yeah.
But very happy being quiet as well, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. And thanks for sharing that in that honest way. And I think, I mean, in my mind, it just speaks to you that you are an adventurer on many levels. Adventure, to me, doesn't always only have to be about risking your life every day in front of a camera. It's about facing all kinds of fears and overcoming them. And I think it speaks to you and for you that you didn't choose the career that maybe comes most easily to you, but that you're willing every day to some extent, and I'm sure it also in some sense gets easier throughout the years. I mean, you know what you're doing, to face these fears as well. But of course, the core of it all is nature, is adventure. That's where your passion is, and that's why you're doing all of this. And you, of course, have come a long way since the snowstorm in Cyprus when you were 8 with your dad getting lost. How would you characterize your own relationship with nature? You obviously spent quite a lot of time in it, but what do you get out of it?
I think it's a safe place for me. You know, even though it's where so many of the dangers are, for me it's a safe place. Everything slows, even when things are happening fast. Feels slow, and I don't know, it's more connected, and it's like you've got to tune in, you've got to listen more, and I like that. It's grounding, it's natural, it's what feels like home. I don't know, it's hard to articulate, but I see it so often with Running Wild now. We're taking so many of these people away, is that the star of that show is the wild. You know, the wild does 90% of the job for me. You know, it strips the kind of fluff of life away, and people connect as a human to human rather than kind of title to title or job to job, you know, boss to employee, or, you know, you don't have any of that. And it's good because, I don't know, it demands respect and it rewards quiet determination. It requires humility because you're always going to be the small guy out there. I don't know. And the more time I spend there, even though we move fast, there's a kind of like, there's a magic to it. And I never fail to get a kick out of seeing it light people up who haven't maybe experienced that before. And so often these guests we take on Running Wild have never really done anything like this. And you see a light in their eye at the end that you can't buy. No amount of drugs or money can give you that. You know, it's a light inside that you got to earn it. You got to earn it by facing a few fears. You got to earn it through being maybe cold and wet for a bit, but doing it together and keeping moving and keeping positive and move forward and be resilient and all that good stuff. And the rewards at the end are always there, but they're the intangible stuff, isn't it? It's a quiet confidence. It's the quiet pride. It's the, you know, do you know what? I didn't think I could do that, but I could, and we did, and together, and thank you. And I also love the fact that it reminds us you got to work together. You know, 1 + 1 in the wild never equals 2. It equals like 5 or 6, you know. And I don't know, everything we need to learn about life is out there. Is that the wild teaches us, just it never brams it down our throat. It just quietly is. And if you listen to it, the lessons are there.
It's nice to hear you speak about like that, because of course on TV, if you just check out 1 or 2 scenes from the show, as you mentioned previously, it's pretty fast paced. You're running around, you're on a rope, you're on a mountain cliff, whatever. So it seems to be a lot about danger and challenges, which of course are, I guess, an important canvas for all of it. But what you are telling me right now, the way I understand you, what it's really about is the quieter moments and the personal impact these journeys have on people.
Well, it has the whole smorgasbord, you know. It has all the danger and the risk and the adrenaline, because that's the backdrop to everything. And the bigger and the wilder the places are, the more it demands it, you know, and it requires it if you're going to make progress. So those kind of are the easy bits in a way, you know, they're the candy. Mm-hmm. But once you get through that, there's a whole another bunch of stuff going on. And I like that. It's that mixture, isn't it?
Has what you are getting out of the wild and out of all of these adventures, has it changed over the years for you personally?
I think so. More and more it's about relationships, actually, and the bonds you create with people in hard times, you know, are actually, that's what keeps me coming back. And you know, I never take those for granted. You know, like I said, I'm so proud that we have our same crew from the beginning. Those are friendships that will last a lifetime, and we've had each other's back and we've saved each other's lives more times than I can, you know, even remember. And there's an unwritten communication and an unspoken communication. There's a trust and a loyalty that wouldn't be there without the challenge that many of these places have given us. And then on the other hand, you have the kind of awareness of how spectacular and beautiful and fragile our world is, and how we're all connected with it. You know, even when we're back home, we're all connected. If we're just, you know, I always remember my grandfather had a little quote next to his bed in a little old bronze frame, and he used to say, "There's always music in the garden, but our hearts sometimes have got to be quiet enough to hear it." And I think it's like that with nature. It's like that with so many things. So I see it in terms of relationships, and that we're all connected and connected to the earth as well, and got to embrace that, and we've got to do all we can to protect it. And it, the whole kind of environmental side of it, it all comes into this as well.
By the way, when you talk about how proud you are that after all these years you still do it with the same team and you have become friends and so on, I also want to point out to our listeners who haven't read the book yet, which I highly recommend, is that you don't just say that. I mean, every successful person says, many tend to say, yeah, it's all because of my team and thanks to my team. I get the sense that you really mean it. In the book, like, almost every chapter is full of people that you're mentioning, that you're giving thanks to. You know, other authors, they put all of that in the appendix. So, you know, finally, I want to thank, and then there's 100 names. You really talk to them through your book, because you seem to really feel, basically, you couldn't have done it without them.
Well, it's true, you know, and even from the climbing stuff, even from the Everest days and stuff, I'd never have reached the top of any mountain just on my own. You know, I'm not talented enough, I'm not strong enough. I think the magic of mountains is a reminder of our fragility, and a reminder of that together we're stronger. I look at so many things in my life in terms of we stand on the shoulders of giants. You know, I truly stand on the shoulders of so many giants, not just my dad as a kid in terms of teaching adventure and skills and values, but in terms of, you know, so many people from the expedition world to that first guy who said, "Do TV, come on." And 3 times he came and knocked on the door.
Yeah.
I would have said, "Screw you. If you don't want it, I'll go to someone else." You know, people that believe in you when you don't believe in yourself is a great gift. And there've been many people like that who helped me over the years. And you can't reach the top of a mountain and go, look at me. You know, it's like, have you learned nothing from the journey? You know, the journey is like, thank you. You know, thank you for all you guys have been amazing. And together we're in this and we're still going and we're just getting going. And I like that. That's what provides the real wealth in my life. It never comes from, it can't come from money. Money doesn't answer those stuff. You know, the wealth in all of our lives, wherever we are, whoever we are, is always going to be in our relationships. And I think when we miss that, that's when our hearts hurt and it's when relationships go wrong.
Talking about relationships, I know that you have a very close and strong relationship, of course, to your three sons. How do they feel about your adventurism fame? Do they think they have the coolest dad in the world, or do they sometimes roll their eyes when you talk about another survival situation and never giving up and so on?
Yeah, they, well, I can give you the short answer to that. They roll their eyes, yeah. You know, there's no heroics at home. You know, they say to me, oh, Papa, if you tell me before I go off to school again that I've got it and never give up. Yeah, again, they've heard it all their life. But you know what? I don't apologize for that, because that's what I want them to remember as they leave school and hit life, you know, is that you've got to keep your friends close and be a good guy and walk humbly and have a tenacious spirit. You know, that matters more than getting A grades and stuff. There's a different currency to life than there is to school. So I think to my kids, I'm very ordinary. I mean, they do say to me, Papa, you do catastrophize everything. You know, they're always going, like, you see a disaster scenario and everything. And I'm like, well, they go, you're Papa, you're a caricature of yourself. It's ridiculous. And I go, well, you never know. You know, it could be. And there's like, and it doesn't ever happen. But yeah, it's like, you never know. You got to be ready. As the scouts say, be prepared. So I think it probably gets worse as I get older, and it, you know, but hey, it's, if it ain't broke.
Exactly. It works so far. Well, so yeah, I mean, your sons, they love you. Millions of people around the world love you or your work. And of course, that's great. A general international success, legions of fans, shows and companies all over the world. But of course, this fame also comes sometimes with a criticism. And I mean, I don't want to go through all the old stuff. But if I just look at YouTube or something, at the comments, and I want to say, in my perception, 90% or even more are very positive, but some they also read like, Bear Grylls is a fake, he's a showman pretending to be a survival hero, he's doing dangerous stuff like running alongside cliffs for effect rather than following actual survival rules. He will eventually get people killed or himself. What surprises me when I read this is how angry and personal this criticism often is. And I mean, maybe that's the price of being famous, I don't know. Does that bother you?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. You know, you'd be strange if that didn't bother you. But you know, I think if you're gonna do stuff in the public eye and you're gonna push a few boundaries, you're gonna get criticism with it, and you've got to kind of have broad shoulders with that. I think in the early days I was much more like, well, hang on, you know, it's like I've never met you. No. And come and join us, I'll show you, you know. And it's like, but now you just have to accept that you're never going to please people all the time, and whoever you are, you're going to get criticism and stuff, and sometimes it's justified and sometimes a little unfair, and you know, sometimes it's you know, it's just the way it is. I mean, you know, in terms of like that thing of you're giving crazy advice and extreme advice, you're going to get people killed. I remember, you know, it's like, I never wanted to do a show. I mean, textbook survival show really says, stay put, do nothing, be safe. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, that's why I didn't want to do that. That's why I said no initially. It's like, that was just kind of boring. Mm-hmm. And I thought, but what happens if nobody's looking for you? And like we said at the beginning, you've just got a roll of sellotape and a, you know, one glove and that's it, you know. Then it kind of becomes fun. And I think ultimately you got to take these stuff with a pinch of salt, and we're trying to make super fun TV, and that's going to empower you with a few great skills that one day hopefully can save your life. And there have been so many great stories where it has.
Yes.
And we've always tried to live it like that, and I've never said, listen, I'm the best at this, look at me. You know, I've always said, hey, you want to follow for the ride? come along, but you're so welcome to switch off.
Yeah.
And, you know, watch something else. But I'm so grateful for so many people who also defend, come to my kind of, I remember listening the other day to a Joe Rogan thing, and Alex Honnold was on it.
I saw that.
And Joe Rogan went off on the scene going, he went, oh, Bear Grylls is this, and that he's awful. And first of all, I'd never met Joe, and I thought, gosh, that's hard, you know. But anyway, and Alex, who's been one of our Running Wild guests, you know, amazing guy, you know, free solo, you know, run, you know, Alex, a true hero. And he could have leapt to my defence. He goes, Joe, stop. Bear's a buddy. We've done all of this together, you know. And he just said some really lovely things. And I thought, there you go. You know, there's the bonds of adventure, you know, shining bright.
Yeah.
You know, in a humility and a loyalty from him when he was on the back foot on Joe's show, you know. And I kind of really admired that and sent him a text afterwards saying, I really appreciate that. Thank you. So, you know what? Long-winded way of saying you're going to get criticism, but hey, we're super lucky, and it's a small downside.
I would like to wrap this conversation up with a few final short questions. That means the question will be short. You can, of course, answer in more than one sentence if you want. I consider my greatest success so far.
Oh, still standing, still smiling, family close, still together, still same best friends from my army days, expedition days. It's my greatest wealth.
A significant regret of mine is?
Yeah, I'm not one of these people who says they have no regrets. You know, I have many regrets where things I've messed up, things I've done badly, unkind words, people I've hurt, you know. Yeah, many, many regrets, but I'm doing my best.
If one of my sons wanted to climb the mountain K2 solo without artificial oxygen, it's really difficult and dangerous, I would tell him,
yeah, first of all, you've got to encourage your kids to follow their dreams, but maybe think about the dreams and call your mama and have that discussion. And
would you try to stop them as a concerned parent that loves his sons?
I think you've always got to encourage. I mean, it's parenting is encourage. I think you've got to hope that you've brought them up to be smart and do things that are achievable and aren't going to cost them their lives. But I remember when my eldest son said he wanted to learn how to base jump. I did discourage to start with, and then he was adamant. And then I said, well, listen, we'll learn it together. We'll do it together. We'll bring in the best people, and now we base jump together, and it's a great privilege. And he's smart, and he's careful, and, you know, he's much better than me, and it's been a privilege of a road. So I think you've got to encourage, but also be smart with it, yeah.
When I think about slowly getting older, some of my goals would be?
Well, the goals change so much, you know, but I've always been a goal setter. You know, I do at the start of every year set goals. I set them in terms of adventure. I set them in terms of work and friendships and family. Mm. So many goals. And I think my bucket list gets longer. And I hope all my life to have a long bucket list. So like, wow, life is such a gift. We got to keep going. Come on, we got to do it now. Not book it tomorrow. We got to book it now. We're gonna block off the time. We're gonna go and do these things. And I think as a family, you know, in between kind of work and stuff, we're pretty good at making these things happen. And my work has given me incredible access to so many adventures. So yeah, keep going. Never give up. NGU.
Earlier on, and we're wrapping up now, earlier on you mentioned that your team says you used to go like 130%, now you're at 70%, so we're getting better. Are you willing in your future, when you look into your future goals, to risk getting a few more scars up your skin and bones broken? Or do you think it's also time to take it a little bit more chill?
I think, like all these things, it's a balance. But I think I want to keep the same spirit of always living it with focus and an intensity. And when you're out there doing these things, never stop smiling and grab it with both hands. And I want to be living like that long after the TV cameras have gone. You know, one of my favorite quotes is, I don't want to arrive at the end of my life in a perfectly preserved body. What a waste that would be. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to come skidding in sideways, covered in scars, screaming, Yahoo, what a ride, you know. And it's one of my favorite quotes, and it's says so much.
And I love that quote as well, and I think it's a great way
a great place to end this conversation. I thank you so much for your time and everything you did so far with your career, which definitely encouraged me quite a bit to get out there and try to have some of these experiences myself.
Oh, I love it. You're kind. Thanks, Eric. And as you said earlier, you know, it's adventure comes in many forms and you're living it. And I truly think adventure is a state of mind. And for so many of your listeners, and it's a privilege to speak to you guys. You guys take care.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric. You take care, buddy. Stay well. And thanks for the interview.
Thank you. Bye.
We survived. We survived.
In der Tat, ja, we survived. Wir haben das Interview überlebt. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet Freude an unserem Gespräch. Für mich war es jedenfalls toll zu hören, wie bescheiden und bodenständig Bär ist, aber auch mit wie viel echter Begeisterung er über seine Arbeit und seinen Bezug zur Natur spricht. Wenn ihr mehr über Bär erfahren und in noch mehr Geschichten eintauchen möchtet, dann empfehle ich euch seine erwähnte Autobiografie Never Give Up – Ein Leben für das Abenteuer, die ist erschienen im Plassenverlag. Und wie immer gilt, wenn euch die Folge gefallen hat, dann hinterlasst uns doch bitte eine Rezension in der Apple Podcast App oder bei Spotify oder erwägt sogar, uns mit einer Mitgliedschaft im Supporters Club zu unterstützen. Lieben Dank, macht es gut und bis zum nächsten Mal.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.